Okay, thank you very much. We are on item number one, which is opening. Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? And I so wish I can check on whether you're praying or not. I'm joking. I'm joking. Well, we definitely need prayer, ne? So that we can be successful in terms of implementation of our work. We need prayer as well. On top of hard working and then the prayer to assist us. Okay, let's allow them to settle. To settle. This is not your committee, ma'am. It's the education, higher education. All right. Yeah, as we were already asked that we should close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation. Shall we close our eyes? Amen. Well, let me welcome the honorable members of the committee, the leader of the delegation from the Department of Higher Education and Training. I take it that is Ms. Butter. Yes, and you. And the officials that are accompanying you, the chairperson of the board of the National Skills Authority and his team. Yes, media. And members of the public present at this meeting today. We are meeting today to receive a briefing from the department on the progress made since the shifting of the technical educational education and training and the community education and training colleges. We also meeting to receive a briefing by the National Skills Authority on its report on the overall performance of the teachers. We thought that since we are now approaching the end of the National Skills Development Strategy term, it would be important that we hear how we have fared with regard to implementation of this strategy and also to look to check on the impact made. So we will be receiving that information because government has now moved from output-based to outcome-based, and also when we talk about outcome-based, we talk about quality outcome-based. So we must look at the impact, and in everything we do, there must be an impact. That's what it means. On the 5th August 2015, we met with the department to interrogate the 2015/16 first quarter report. It was during this meeting that we requested the department to brief the committee about the challenges regarding payments of salaries of the adult educators, because we're getting calls, we're getting letters written to us, and we're informed that people, teachers in this sector, were resigning because they were not being paid, so we then thought it would be necessary that we hear from them. Then we called them to give us a briefing. So it emerged that there were serious challenges, and given the limited scope of the agenda of that day, we requested a follow-up meeting to receive a detailed briefing on progress of this since the function shift in April to date, function shift of TNET and the CET sectors to the department. We are also receiving a briefing from the National Skills Authority on the implementation report of the National Skills Development Skills Tree from 2013 to 2015. It's actually it's a handover report, sort of. So this initiative would assist in ensuring that you start, but you brief us also on the contents of that as you're coming to the end of the term of this National Skills Development 3. We requested this briefing after noting that CETA licensing was also coming to an end on the 31st March 2016. So the reason for this sitting is also to be informed on how CETAs performed during this period. Developments are that their licensing has been extended by 2 years, and the NSDS will also continue until 2018. So these are the latest developments. But my processes to develop the NSDS 4 and new CETA landscape are finalized. Yesterday, we also received a government gazette calling for public comments. So let's familiarize ourselves with the proposal. With these few words, I declare the meeting open, and I'm looking forward to meaningful and constructive engagement. Thank you very much. You are all welcome. We'll then quickly move over to item number 2, which is apologies.
Thank you, Chair. We receive apologies from Honorable Bozoli, Ms. Nchuno, Ms. Killian, the Minister, as well as the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, here are the apologies. Do we accept the apologies? Or accepted, the apologies accepted. So we'll then move over to, shall we then register those that have not submitted their apologies as accept? Without introductions, I am Pinky Porter, but my official name is Yvonne, so that you don't get confused when you see Yvonne. I'm the chairperson of the committee. And then I'll ask the honorable members.
I'm Patrick Frieda, member of the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning. So we're the eldest member of the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Pombas, member of the committee.
Thank you very much.
My name is Denise, I'm member of the committee.
Thank you.
Yes, Cassie, member of the committee.
Thank you. I will then ask the officials accompanying the committee to introduce themselves.
Good morning, my name is Ampao Mdiwa, committee content advisor.
Content advisor, thank you.
I'm Ali Kandiris, I'm the committee secretary.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Elijah Mvulula, the committee media administrator.
Thank you. So, yes, we are done. We will then move over to the department. Over to you, Mr. Atel.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Feroz Patel, Department of Higher Education and Training, from the Planning Branch.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm Temba Msip from the Function Shift Project Management Office.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Myself from the Department of Higher Education and Training, Vocational Education and Training Branch.
Thank you.
Good morning, thank you, Chair. My name is Lulama Mboko. I'm the DDG responsible for corporate services in the department.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, as well as colleagues. I'm Zuko Christopher Mvalo from the Department of Higher Education and Training in Pretoria 126. representing Skills Development Branch.
Now you know where to find him. Thank you. Over to you.
Monique, it is an honorable member. Tiens Toriou, CFO for the department.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and all honorable members and colleagues. My name is Thulani Shefuda. I participate in the meeting as the acting chairperson of the National Skills Authority. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. Thabo Mashawane, National Skills Authority, serving as the chief officer.
Thank you, sir. If you can switch on your mic.
Good morning, I'm Tesi Mungalu, Deputy Chairperson for National Skills Authority.
Thank you.
Morning, my name is Babali Ramapidia Dantrap for the Senate. I'm the one of the National Skills Authority Deputy Chairperson.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chair members. My name is Jocelyn Bass, Deputy Chairperson representing SAIS.
Good morning, chair members. My name is Arima Ngubewa, National Skills Authority Secretary.
Thank you, ma'am.
Nomonde Khasmeni, CLO.
Thank you, Nomonde.
Good morning. My name is Kali Patavela, PLO.
Thank you, ma'am. I think the only difference that I observed here, we've got how many deputy chairpersons? Come again.
Oh, yeah, it's three, but in total it's five, representing five constituencies: organized labor,
okay,
organized business,
right,
state, community, and providers, education training providers.
Okay, well, that's fine. We're learning every day, and it's allowed. Thank you so much. Now that we know you're sitting here, may I once more welcome you, and please just make this meeting our meeting. It should not be between us and them. It is our meeting. Remember, we are here to find the best solutions for this country. So it is not by mistake. So let's then work together and make sure that the outcome of the meeting also is quality outcome. So then move on to item number 4 on briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training, the function shift progress. On the function shift of technical and vocational education and training and community education and training sectors. It's true, we once received this progress report, but now we want a further progress. Not necessarily, you know, because you remember we did get a progress report and we were all happy and we applauded the department for the smooth function shift, but now we want to know where are we and the challenges, so that if there's anything that we need to apply our mind on, carefully apply our minds on and advise before we see another disaster in the form of protests, let's deal with it in this meeting. Or advise us and also on your counter-strategy, because we don't want a continuation of this as it has got the potential of disrupting and also taking us back. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Patel.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just go through the presentation, and then we have our acting DDG for RESET and our DDG for Corporate Services, who will then begin to also add at the time of discussion and questions in regards to some of the details. The brief given to us, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, was a briefing update on the function shift of technical that's TVET and community education and training sectors. So basically the report will give an overview of the staffing situation, an update on the capacity within the department and how we're progressing with that. We will also reflect on the queries that we've received, and we grateful always, Chairperson and Honourable Members, for the engagement and advice that we've got through the Portfolio Committee, and the fact that the Portfolio Committee has prioritized reporting and oversight over the function shift, which is always very helpful for us to manage such complex process. And then also, what are the interventions that we've put in place to resolve delays in the payment of claims, and then what our future plans are in regards to moving away then from transition to more stability. And just a reflection on some of the achievements in regards to the high-level milestone plan, but also what are the priority areas that we move forward with. If we look at the overview of the Community Education and Training College and TVET staff, you remember that we had given you reports earlier around 38,000. The number to date is 36,394. And as we were indicating, that a lot of the information was not coming from provinces, and that was the estimation at that stage. So we have 10,178 posts in regards to, let me start with 36,394 broken up into a number of TVET staff in regional offices, community education and training staff in regional offices, those are official, TVET college staff 16,690, and the CET staff about 19,000 broken up into 10,000 in post, 7,400 on the claim system, and 1,735 based on fixed stipend. So you'll notice that there is a lot of differentiation in the Community Education Training College. So that's in terms of the staff, 36,000. Now, as you may remember, we created 147 posts from the 1st of April, and they were advertised and they were in various stages of completion. At least 43% of the post appointments have been made, and 34%, that I'm leaving the two lines at the bottom, 34% interviews are completed and recommendations made, so we are awaiting the appointments and assumption of duty. So there is 113 posts that have been finalized, and considerable pressure has been received. We are in the process of shortlisting 30 of these particular posts. Three posts were withdrawn due to incorrect specifications, and one has been re-advertised. Honorable members, in regards to queries, and I want to put the issue of the queries in context. If you look at the almost 36,000 posts that we work with, 19,000 in the community education and training college sector, the number of cases that we receive total have been 362. Of these, as expected, 300 were in the area of HR queries. Other queries were 62. And of the HR queries, 222 were directly salary related. So we've resolved 190 of them. 32 have not been resolved. And they're not resolved because it's not about the immediate payment of work that is done, say, end of the month. But it is related to collective agreements where provinces and colleges did not effect the implementation of collective agreements. For example, if you studied and you upgraded yourself from REQ 13 to REQ 15, you need to get to be put on a higher notch. Or annually, your pay progression 1% per annum has not been implemented. And I will go into a bit more detail around that, Chairperson, because you did ask about what are the risks involved and what are the potential hotspots. So the percentage of salary related 86 and were resolved. The 14%, we have to wait on a systemic issue. For example, we have to calculate who's responsible for those backlogs that is prior to the 1st of April, and how do we get the funds from provinces. So that's a national treasury process. Jefferson, the overview of queries graphically, big blue, 83% HR admin, and the others are thin slice of other particular matters. The HR ones have already spoken about this, 300 queries, 9 about labor relations, issues about grievances or disputes, 9 about organizational development, and that means where the posts of promotion posts should have been established, and a number of those other particular matters. So, and organizational development will also be conditions of service and backlogs in payment of progression. Now, the next one is the 2x2. You go to the earlier slide, and if you want a breakdown of those HR queries, what are they detailed, you'll see the numbers there, ranging from conditions of service to medical aid, pension fund, and these are your normal HR particular queries, day-to-day particular queries. And that gives a sum of 300. The biggest number there is salary-related queries and appointments. I also alluded to the fact that most of the salary queries, 96%, are current. They short them. I'm not on the right notch. I didn't get my salary, etc. And 4% are medium-term queries. Again, another graph around all showing the same figures. I'm not going to go into it. But let's look at the provincial breakdown of where the queries are coming from, particularly in relation to salaries. 173 from KwaZulu-Natal. And honorable members, we have indicated the situation in KwaZulu-Natal in the way that the province within their own, when they had the function, they could have managed the function as best they wanted to. So they had a very, very distributed system reaching into far-flung areas, rural areas. But also the appointments system that they used was, they used current employed educators who then worked additionally after hours, that's afternoons and evenings. And these are extraordinary appointments. If you are one government department, you can take your current employees and you can also appoint them to do overtime or to do additional work. But you are not allowed from one government department to appoint part-time people from another government department, particularly around between province and national. And she was ready to save people only 2 or 3 salaries. So there is a check and balance in the payroll system. And so we are difficulty in that in our system would not allow the appointments. That's what we call extraordinary appointments. It is not an ideal process to have currently employed people doing another job, because we do have enough unemployed to be able to ensure that we give everybody an opportunity for employment. So in KwaZulu-Natal, we couldn't effect these automatically. We had to do them by hand. We had to verify qualification, verify banking detail, and a number of those particular area. But given the number of 36,000 personnel, again, chairperson, this is what has been brought to our notice. And in Limpopo and Northwest, we had indicated similar in previous reports, around the stipend system that they use and the claim system. Where people want per cell, very, very little problems. You see, there's a total absence of Gauteng because all the personnel were on per cell. If I move on, now, the specific focuses on community education and training because it was the sector that was the most differentiated in terms of provinces. Each province had the liberty to manage this particular sector in the way it saw fit in terms of their own needs. However, at national level, we have to begin to move at ensuring that we have consistency across the provinces because we are a national department. However, we are under the protection of the Labor Relations Act, Section 197, which says that when we move people from one employer to another, they come over with the same terms and conditions. The challenge for us really is whatever happened to them with the previous employer, we could continue with that. And over time, we could have a new agreement to find consistency. And it's not only time-bound, but also budget availability. However, dear person, working in the public service, that 187 doesn't work as well as it does in the private sector. Because in the private sector, when there's mergers and acquisitions, you will find that the employees do move over with the same terms and conditions. In our case, there are people that come in with less favorable conditions, and they will always hesitate and argue to have consistency. But in terms of the particular process is, as an employer, we have made sure that no one comes with less benefits than they particularly have. And so we are now in this mode as we have taken over the function and as we begin to integrate it within our system, looking at a number of these particular issues. We also have the policy on community education and training colleges, which speaks of what the landscape and terrain around community education and training colleges are to be. As you are aware, our current community learning centers, as is the old AS centers, but there was a commission, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, because of the 6,000 centers that are there, is to begin to look at how do we make the 6,000 centers manageable. How do they operate? So the investigation, terms of reference was to look at how do they operate, the learning centers. There's been a interprovincial, or you can say across our region, tasking consisting of officials from a number of provinces, and the mandate was to investigate the operations of community learning centers in KZN and come up with findings and recommendations. The investigation was conducted from the 29th of September to the 1st of October, focusing on the following areas, that is the clustering of community learning centers, a replacement of the claim system for fixed term contracts, and possible termination of contracts of double parkers. So as we identified, KZN was with 6,000 centers, we had all the issues around the claim system, and so therefore this investigation focused on trying to rationalize in regards to that. I just want to explain the term of double parkers. In the rest of the country, the provinces have taken a decision that people who teach in adult education training centers have to be unemployed educators, and it should not be educators that are already currently teaching in schools in the daytime, in the morning, and in the evening that they do additional work. But KwaZulu-Natal, due to a number of reasons, had employed people that were principals or deputy principals or teachers at schools to run the centers. And chairperson, there's a good reason for that. KwaZulu-Natal, because strategy, they want to reach every community, every local authority, every rural area. So while we say that they have 6,000 centers, it may be that this is an advantage of the strategy to make adult education accessible to rural and the poor areas. So that's number one. Number two is that the sufficiency, and when you spread out so thinly, and the number of educators that you have, the issue is that there are insufficient educators to employ on a full-time basis rather than existing. So we will be looking at it, and hopefully this, from the recommendations, we can also learn whether we want to be very deep in terms of access to community education and training. That is our ultimate goal, so we will have to find a midway between administering those particular centers vis-a-vis the issue of accessibility. So the question would come up in regards to, we can't expect enough. For example, in Gauteng, they got 47 centers, whereas KZN got 6,000. And in Gauteng, there's public transport, it's compact, it's dense, they can allow that. But what we would want to perhaps do is not streamline access, but streamline the administration so it can be more efficient. So the task team did visit a number of districts, and those were the Frey, Dundee, and Durban. You see that this is not a task team that drags on. It was a quick going in, finding out the issues, and presenting a report. So it's a 3 or 4 day investigation. So the findings of the task team were, in regards to educators, that more than 40% of the educators in the regions are unqualified. They most position of a grade 12 certificate. So Chairperson has already told us what we have to do, and where we target is we will have to find a way in which we get these employees either qualified or we begin to get more qualified educators. The reality of that particular situation is that we don't have any reports of what the plans of KwaZulu-Natal Education Department were in regards to employment of people with their job certificates only. However, we will have to drill quite deep into this, and there are a number of options, policy options that we will have to look at, is to see whether we can get qualified educators. If not, whether we can provide an interim foundation phase qualification for adult education learners. For example, in 1995-1996, when we established the new democratic schooling system, we found that 89,000 educators were under or unqualified for no fault of their own. And the state then undertook to provide a national diploma, professional diploma in education to upgrade those particular educators, because they were allowed into the system, prior to 1994, and we could not just discount them. Some are in possession of a 1 or 2 year certificate. Information provided indicates that approximately 22% of the educators are double parkers. And I explain what double parkers are, and one can see there is a shortage of educators because of the modality that KwaZulu-Natal uses in distribution of the centers all over to rural areas. You're not going to, for example, get an educator that's qualified, unemployed in Durban, that is willing to go deep into Angola, for example, to go into teach. So we have to have a strategy, and we're working on a strategy to deal with this. If I then move on to these are the figures, just in the sample of districts, 714 people are double parkers. Number of dedicated, that means they only do the adult education, is 2,742. So you can see that's where 22% come from. Also, how do they operate? Most of the community learning centers are hosted by public ordinary schools. Therefore, the principal or the deputy principal or the teacher in the school provides the accommodation. That's why they're also double parkers. And then access to facilities is linked to the issue of the availability and the buy-in and sense of ownership by the school that is being used itself. In regards to appointment and remuneration of educators, we indicated that the region still uses the monthly pay system. This is really, to get a claim from a deep rural area in Pongola to get it to the district, so you provide your service in month, say August. By the time it is verified that you have done your work, etc., in September, by the time it reaches our finance and HR section, it is August and October. KwaZulu-Natal used to take 5 months to process these particular claims. We have cut it down to about 3 months, is it? 2 months. We've cut it down to 2 months. And we will still have to find a way in terms of trying to deal with it. If not, we will probably have to look at a type of an advanced system where one is the first month salary comes to you automatically as an advance, and then we process those claims on a reimbursement nature. But it's something that we will definitely focusing on. If I then move on to the staff establishments, in a way, KwaZulu-Natal centers are run as one big center. There are no institutional. So if you look at a center in KwaZulu-Natal, it may be one educator and eight learners in a rural area. So there's no facility, there is no principal, deputy, support staff, etc. These are centers that provide these services. Right. And then there's no differentiation, as I indicated, principal, deputy principal, support staff. So this slide gives a sense. Now, what are the recommendations that the team is making? Well, we must have a management plan in terms of how we're going to be looking at the clustering of centers, how to make efficiency, to ensure efficiency in the payment, try to deal with the underqualified, how do we deal with people that are providing double, working full-time and then, as a teacher, but also working in the afternoon. Also looking at the contracting basis. It's not sustainable every year to get the contracts to get terminated and then to appoint. And of course we say we want to terminate the training system. If I continue, we've also discovered that there's a particular relationship with correctional services where some of the centers are within the correctional facilities and how to be able to deal with that. In-service training, as I indicated, and clustering. There have been a number of interventions that we have reduced what used to be within 5 months to 2 months, is that we've instituted overtime at our head office section, at both at finance and at and human resource. We're introducing bulk payments via national treasury, appointing of additional staff. We undertook the study to be able to see how we can improve it, and then introducing a case procedure that is much more streamlined. We're saying that as soon as the month is concluded, the claim forms must be submitted to the regional police. They are given a time limit where those claims must be couriered to head office for processing. Our future consideration is decentralizing some of these functions as soon as our regional offices are functional and up and running. Remember that we've excised them from the old provincial departments. They don't have the full infrastructure, access to personnel, etc. And therefore, as we move through, we will start decentralizing some of those functions, and hopefully we can reduce the waiting period from the time the service is performed to the time payment is effected is within 30 days. Then, of course, we also have the conditions of service. Some people are paid via claims, others are appointed on a full-time basis, some are paid stipends. So we want to, and we've got a process underway of standardizing these conditions. However, these will have cost implications. When you want to standardize, you have to try to standardize to what people are used to rather than reducing benefits. There is a cost implication, but as I indicated, provinces work on different rates, on different tariffs, different ages of appointment. So therefore, Chairperson, we're considering still the community education and training colleges, especially in terms of the function that move, in terms of Section 197 of the LRA, that they come over on the same terms and conditions. We're also saying that we've got, we've put a time limit in terms of which we have to fix it, so at least there's a time limit, and therefore we will not be forced to, in regards to making everybody permanent in terms of the Labor Relations Act, until we're able to deal with the harmonization of conditional services. Now, I go to the high-level milestone plan. I want to say that the nine councils have been appointed. The minister met with all the council members, but prior to that, We as a department got all the nine community education and training colleges together, that we were taken through a detailed induction process, and also they appointed the office bearers, that is the chairperson and the secretary, two councils, so that they're fully established. We have also instituted processes where the council has authorized the department to procure on their behalf goods and services. Councils have also indicated by resolution that they would want to request the minister to exempt them from establishing an academic board until these councils are fully established and capacitated. We've also appointed principals to the nine councils, and that's the area of governance. In regards to finance, the Ministry of Finance has approved the interim norms and standards for funding. Remember that we identified it as a key blockage that we will not be able to allocate funds, but the Minister of Finance has concurred, and it was published in the Government Gazette on the 9th of November. Chairperson, our HR section, and has been on a, I won't say rote, but intensive two-day induction workshops with both TVET and community colleges in each of the provinces. It's outlining the legislation, looking at HR management processes and a number of other particular areas. These induction processes proved very useful because it's the first time that the HR managers, the finance people in colleges were able to meet with the department face-to-face with senior officials led by Mr. Mbobo in terms of full induction. The operationalization of and training of council and staff, the strategic planning workshop for the 9th CEC was conducted from 15th to the 17th, Dr. McClure. In other words, how do they deal with their own planning within the community education and training community education and training colleges. In terms of submission of their full plans, their annual performance plans, and a number of areas. In its own standardization of policies, a working session has been undertaken to confirm internal DHET sign-off on the policies. The policies will be finalized at the end of this month, and then they will be consulted with organized labor, as well as our DG and minister, for implementation from April 2016. However, as I indicated, that funding will be an issue, and we are covered by the LRA terms of condition, and if funding is not available for the April 2016 financial year, the implementation means that we will have to source some of that funding. But we will also look internally in regards to internal funding that is within the program group of how to ensure that we at least begin to move towards standardization. Uniform conditions of service is another one, is that the finance section in the recent branch has revised 29 policies. The HR labor relations has revised 45 policies for standardization of conditions of service, and the determination of has to be finalized. So there's a two-pronged process. Let's first get the policies consulted, etc., and the second one is let's then get the funding. So when we say these are finalized, that doesn't mean that we have funding. That means that we have agreement on standardized conditions of service. We also proposal on both the community education training college and TVET colleges, post-career norms, will be presented to the minister end of the month. Now, Chair, towards rounding up, what are the priority areas moving forward? The priority areas, they have been identified previously as risks. They have been identified as risks. And this is the issue of the sourcing of funds for the backlogs. Now, what do we mean by backlog? We think that if there has been non-implementation of collective agreements by provinces up to the 31st of March 2015, it's actually not a liability of us as this department. It's a liability created elsewhere, wherever that authority was. But as I indicated, we are covered under the Labor Relations Act to have these terms and conditions that you come with from your previous employer. But our aim is to harmonize it within one public service, within a national department. So there are funding implications. We have to quantify that issue. There are collective agreements that have to be implemented. So the question is, we have quantified, go to National Treasury, and ask them to find the funds. Now, this is part of it, again, will be very hard discussions, and ensure the portfolio committee, with again, assist like you've always assisted, is that there may be a need to, because money in the past was allocated to provinces, they went into the provinces to be able to see how some of it can be taught as we move forward. But we leave that to Treasury to begin to get particular proposals. The implementation of the Labour Relations Act, Chairperson, in this year the Labour Relations Act was amended, and it said that nobody should be in a post that where they get paid 200 and there's a threshold 203 or 208,000 below it. So if you earn below that, if you're in a substantive funded post and you've been on contract for more than 3 months, you need to be automatically on permanent. So we've got thousands and thousands of people in this particular position. Our first step is we've issued in the process of issuing a circular where we're asking colleges to place a moratorium on the termination of those contracts. So placing a moratorium or a halt on the termination of the contracts means that the rights created in the Labour Relations Act must be protected. And then we have a formal process of appointing them permanent. In education, however, there are a number of issues that are going to be professionally qualified, etc. So in the previous sector, we don't think it's going to be much of a problem. And making somebody permanent, there's no cost implication involved, except for the individual, because they will no longer get the benefits in terms of cash, 37% added on to the basic salary, but what they would get is that they would have to access medical aid, they would have to access the housing allowance, etc. So in some cases, people have got contracts, they've got used to getting more money in cash, but now that they will then receive it in benefits. So there's a number of those particular processes. And then finally, Chairperson, on the accommodation, process are still underway. As we had indicated previously, it takes 18 months for public works to secure accommodation. Sometimes it can take long. In some of the areas, you just don't find that there are empty buildings available. But we've been fortunate that we thank the MECs and head of departments for housing our staff for now and not evicting them as they had threatened area. Now, Chairperson, just before I just asked Dr. McCrobo just to add one area, I want to indicate that the current hashtag fees must fall, or is it 0% increase fees, will have an effect on our TVET colleges too. So we are, together with the university, saying while we are talking about university, we're also looking at the TVET sector in regards to the issue of fees. The problem of fees is not that high in the TVET sector because fees are only levied on at most 20% of the total. So 80% are fully funded learners, so it's about 80%. But also a number of colleges have been able to absorb those costs in regards from either their services or efficiency. But we are keeping an eye on that particular process. So Chairperson, if I may, just ask Dr. Matroba to add something that we discussed before I finalized this presentation this morning. Dr. Matroba, just on the infrastructure.
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. With regard to infrastructure, we're looking, the commitment is the establishment or the construction of a tax campuses and the refurbishment of the form. I'll talk to those where work is already in progress, and which is the one in Tabazinde and in Tanga, which is one in town, and one in Bambanani in the Mkanyago district. With regard to Tabazinde, as at the end of October, I think, the progress in terms of construction was at 85%. and with an anticipated completion date of February 2016. And that is the Tabazimbo one. And with regard to the Nkanga A, which is in town, the physical progress made there is at the time of this report, which was, I think, also end of October. The progress made in terms of construction was at 30%, and with an anticipated date of completion being June 2016. With regard to Wambanai, which is one in the north in Kanyabute, the progress report is such that its progress is 43%, and the anticipated date of completion is May 2016. Then the other issue which I need to talk to has got to do with the fact that the shelter budget for the three campuses, because we could not get an operational budget from the federal treasury, and there is a commitment from the NSF of 300 million, which will be used for initial operations of the three campuses. And with regard to other campuses, given the increase in construction cost, there is reason to believe that the available budget may not be able to cover the difference, which is 9. It possibly we may have to secure additional funding for the additional 5. The available funding can cater for 4. We will have to source funding for the additional 5. Again, when first tender was published, we got tender evaluated, but we actually could not fund suitable contractors, and therefore the initial tender had to be cancelled and a new tender published so that we can get contractors for the additional 4 campuses that I'm talking about, while we are looking at sourcing funding for the 5. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mukamba. Chair, for you, this is Mogo.
Thank you, Jay. Just as a way of additions, the first thing we also want to highlight is that the Minister approved the delegation of authority to college principals. That is in as far as the appointment and the management of staff is concerned for salary level 1 to 8 and post level 1 to 3. So the principals have now the authority to, you know, to appoint and process all HR-related issues around it. The second one, the thing I want to highlight as a way of progress, we also started the process of addressing the question of the RHUV backlogs. What we picked up is that the number of indicators, the RHUVs, needs to be updated on person. So we've requested again colleges to assist in submitting information on qualifications of staff. We are hoping to finalize that process in the next 2 months, that is the end of February, because I'm not counting December. What we also did, we wrote a submission to the minister to request an approval on the process and the conditions for making, you know, a lecturing staff tournament in terms of the Labor Relations Act as amended. Because we believe that that's a process that also needs to be consulted on with organized labor. So whilst we are putting a moratorium on the terminations of staff, we're also asking the minister to approve a process that will lead to their identification and permanency. Lastly, Chairperson, I do want to also report, because this may be coming, I think, to you and the members of the committee, the backlogs in terms of pay progression. What we have picked up is that a number of colleges have not been complying with performance management
and as a result, there will be backlogs in terms of pay progression. So we started a process again of identifying all such backlogs with a view to also correcting the notch of all educators on the system. So we are working here together with SAICA to assist us in finalizing that process. The last issue, Tay and Mr. Patel, is the question of pensions. We inherited some staff who had were promoted by colleges, but were not promoted on personal by provincial departments. And as a result, we find that their pensions are not at the right, their pensions are not paid because the colleges were paying them a top salary whilst the provincial department was paying them, you know, a basic salary. So we appointed attorneys to assist us to do calculations in terms of what will be the liabilities in terms of the pension to GTF. So that process will soon be finalized with a total of about 500 educators that are implicated, that are affected by the problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. That was the report that you requested from the department, or are we still proceeding with information from the department? I think we mustn't leave the CFO off the hook. You've touched on the 0% no fee, you know, or a fee increase. And you said this also has got a spiraling effect on the TVET colleges. And up till so far, we've been talking about a 2.3 billion that needs to be found, you know, to offset this 0%. But then, SAIRAM, I can recall, this one has more to do with universities, and it does not take into consideration the TVET colleges. Now, you see, you can't deal with this thing in just nails. Now, I'd like the CFO to just respond on that one, because you can't wait until there's another protest for this demand. Instead, as leaders, we've got to be proactive. And as now, this is an input that has got to be made to the presidential task team as well, so that we don't just talk 2.3 billion when there's still money to be found for, you know, to offset also at the TVET colleges. So if you may fill us in with information, Mr. Trudeau.
Thank you, Jefferson. There's not much information to share the community at this point in time. The presidential works task team is aware of the position as well. So it's not new to them. In terms of the department on our side, we have submitted documentation already previously to National Treasury in regards to the low baseline funding for TV colleges. There has been a concern on our side for the past 2-3 financial years already, and there has been communication to Treasury in that respect. And perhaps also to identify that we did not only motivate for additional subsidy funding, but also for an increase on the TV part for NSFAS. But then third thing, which is also very important, is infrastructure grants for TV colleges. You will be aware that in the university sector we have a dedicated infrastructure grant for universities. In the TV sector there is no such grant. In the period that TV colleges were funded at provincial level, very limited, and I want to exceptionally say very limited, infrastructure money was provided to the colleges. Western Cape specifically had a few million rand that they provided to the colleges for infrastructure development, and I think the other province, I think it was Eastern Cape, not President, Eastern Cape, but very small amounts. So that has been something that we've been requesting for quite a substantial period now, two national treasury is to look at the possibility of implementing some kind of infrastructure grant also for the use of the civic sector, because the need there is also substantial. Adding to that, that's just what we also discussed in the Steering Committee on Appropriations, is that the current ability in the department to reprioritize is almost zero. Our funding transfers are linked to specific sectors. If we take money from the one to the other, we will actually damage the sector we reprioritize from. We did, in the case of the 0% fee increase, reprioritize some funding to the university sector only, which would then address a very small portion, and we're talking about 300 approximately million, as part of the assistance on the side of the department to fund the 0% fee increase. The CETA service money that is also dedicated partly for funding the 0% fee increase, they be already now actually reprioritized by taking money that was dedicated for specific university programs as well as TVET programs to fund the 0% fee increase. So in some of the ability of the department, and even within the CETA surplus funding, it's extremely limited to reprioritize any further, and we will need to have a situation at some point in time that the baseline allocation of the department needs to be increased. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you for this additional information. I'm sure you'll agree with me that we needed this information, even though this information does not give us figures, because they say figures can't lie. You see, we need to know now, and the public domain needs to know, and everybody, even the National Treasury, need to know the exact amount that we need to offset this zero fee for 2016 at both the university level as well as TVET college level. So the 2.2 billion is not accurate. We need to get accurate information on the money that is needed to offset, because there's no way in which you can say at the university level they must not increase, and then at a TVET college level you leave them to increase. And they won't agree, to be honest. And taking into consideration the number of TVET colleges we have and the number of campuses, I know it's about 50 TVET colleges, and the number of campuses is 2,000. That protest, I'm telling you, we will not be able to manage. So it will be much better if we prevent it from happen. We are leaders. We can't wait. Actually, we have waited, and the students have learned that unless they take these things into their, you know, in their hands, nothing will happen. It's the wrong precedence. Unfortunately, it already started. So we can't wait now for the students to protest to get that money again. So I'm sure we've learned something. Let's not wait for them to take things, you know, in their hands. Let's lead. Let's continue leading by being proactive and making sure that we find solutions for them, not for them to force us to find solutions. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I will now open this for a discussion. Honourable Member Kazim, Honourable Member, I don't know who raised, put your hands up first. Then I'll say Suela, and then Honourable Member Mbata, and then Honourable Member Gadimi. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I want to start with the investigation that was done into the communication, the community education and training colleges and centers in KZN. My first question regards to the issues that have been identified, in particular the issues of those teachers that are unqualified, or the educators that are unqualified, educators that are double parked, etc. Does the department have any idea or information as to how this, what is the situation across the country?
understanding that these were run very differently across different provinces, and therefore, it might not be a true representation of all the issues that exist across the country. There may be other issues that exist, but this is particularly indicated in. So what is that, if the department has any information on that, then what exactly is the extent of the severity of these issues as it pertains to the sector across the country? The second question, Chairperson, is with regards to the availability of facilities being asserted in the presentation is dependent on the appointment of these double parkers as centre managers. Now, what exactly is the legal standpoint as it pertains to this? Understanding that a lot of these facilities, be they schools, fall under the basic education department. They are public facilities. They are not owned by principals or teachers at those schools that want to say, well, I want to be one of your center managers before you can use my facilities. They don't belong to them. So what exactly is the legal standpoint, and what is the department doing with regard to this issue? Because I think this is a very, very serious issue that exists, and it will impact the efficiencies within the system and the access to facilities within the system to this sector. Then, Chairperson, with regards to the ratio, the educator-learner ratio, it was said that there wasn't proper control over the number of educators to be appointed, and this has resulted in a learner-educator ratio or educator-learner ratio of 1 to 8. What I want to know from the department in terms of its own, in terms of the function shift and its own vision going forward, what is the target ratio which will be both efficient for the sector but will preserve quality within the sector across the board, and what are the steps that will be taken to move in that direction? So just moving to the TVET college sector for the second, Chairperson. On the shortfalls, and it was something that was raised by the Chairperson as well, when we had a meeting with the Appropriation Committee, this was the last meeting that we sat in 2 weeks ago, there was figures that were given in terms of the baseline shortfall. So I can call it the baseline shortfall of about 30 billion rand within the TVET sector. What exactly is the shortfall as it pertains to students that are eligible for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme within that sector? And I'm talking about fully funded students, because even currently as it stands with the bursary guidelines, students are not being fully funded, number one. But number two, even those students that are supposed to be getting specific sections of funding according to that guideline are not getting those sections of funding. So what's the shortfall with regards to that, and what percentage of students do the department anticipate will be either underfunded or will be not funded at all in the TVET college sector in 2016. Then as it pertains to the increases within TVET college campuses, what is the average increase that is being anticipated for next year? With TVET colleges now falling directly under the Department of Higher Education, just some information as to what exactly will the picture be come the beginning of next year. I'll ask again in the next round. Thank you, Chair.
Upon Honourable Member Sweda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. I am partly covered by Honourable Kapsin and some of the questions that I wanted to ask. But then Dr. Masolo indicated or said that there were tenders that were cancelled due to the fact that they couldn't find suitable contractors. And at the same time, the cost of construction is also skyrocketing. It's not waiting for us. And that you have just issued a new tender. When will that be adjudicated? So that we are able to deal with the issue of the rising cost, because the more delay, it's just that you have enough money for about 4 colleges. By the time you adjudicate your tender, you might find that you just have enough for 3. and that will be very costly for the department. Perhaps you can shed some light on that one. And in a country of about 40 million people, I find it very difficult that we couldn't find a suitable contractor, but I will accept it the way you put it, where so many people die to do these constructions every day. Secondly, I want to talk to the issue of the double parking. Honorable Kasim also spoke about it. A very compelling reason why there should be double parking in a country where we have got high levels of unemployment. Is it possible that we can do away with this double parking so that we get more people into the system? And for those people that, you indicated that a law stipulated that if you end in the particular category, you should be appointed permanently. And here you put to us that there were those people who were employed with a grade 12 certificate. That will happen to them because I know that in the education sector, you have to meet certain minimum requirements for you to be employed as an educator. Are you going to shut them up, or are you going to put them into some form of training so that you finally, not disadvantaged, but also appoint them permanently? Thank you.
Mr. Fela, I think he was so correct when you alluded to the delayed projects, which result to delayed service delivery, but also having cost implications. It all talks to timeliness, a plan that is time-bound and it is observed and implemented to the latter as you deliver on the time frame that you have allocated. So there must be an implementation plan of time frame. So thank you very much. The next one is Mr. Mbata.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning. I just want to first make a brief statement about cases, and I happen to come from there. I know very well that the adult education sector at some point had a fortunate position where there was a political campaign which was aimed at educating communities there. It was aimed at extending the value of education across the province, in particular targeting young and old rural women and young and old young men who did not make it for many reasons. It was started by the former Premier, Ambassador Ndebele. This was the period between 2004 and 2009, and the aim was to educate approximately about 3 million citizens. Now, how do you educate 3 million citizens when the entire education, teacher education and training sector was closed? You remember the education centers, the former education centers, like your former Mbumbulu and so many others, were turned into something else that we know today. So I think the interventions did not, in some way or the other, see the turn of events as they are today. But I do believe that they were well-intended. Approximately more than 3 million people today are able to write their names, and they are able to prevent fraud by signing their signatures. Most of them are old and coming from disadvantaged areas. So I would like to suggest that when you rearrange structural in KZN, you must be sensitive. There was an intention to do good there. But also, the double parking, it is in a massive campaign like this, you start with the available stock. You don't dream about teachers that are within the system or the pipeline. You start with those that can get in, and get out and get the numbers pushed. So I guess the ideal was to find those existing interests, and that is why most of those programs existed between the afternoons and Saturdays and Sundays. So for me, really, the ideal will be to establish first if there were available funds over that period that were interlinked with a non-education department. For instance, did the premier office in that province or the premier's office in that province, did it ever budget for that program? And when things went restructured, what happened to those funds? Can you, for the purposes of that, can you negotiate with National Treasury for that program? If it was financed for more than 4 years, it means those funds could not disappear. It means they move from one political term to another. So you can still track them before they could actually be used for t-shirts for local government campaigns, I'm just saying. The other one is, when you build the three colleges, I think, as Honorable Suwela has indicated, it's important that you build them on time, because you also told us that there are numbers in the next 5 years that you want to achieve in the sector, knowing very well that the sector also is currently receiving a lot of attention, which means a number of young people are getting diverted into the sector. So you might find that as you advertise in various areas for access, the Tibet College in specific areas, it could be overflowing. And you will discover that one of the reasons for overflow is precisely because of you do not have enough facilities to enroll and have the access to all the. So for me, the link between the construction program and your projected numbers and the adherence thereof is very important, so that you also meet cost and meet the prices of these construction projects, but also you attend access to young people. The issues about the conditions of service, in majority of the scenarios that you have explained, in particular with the community colleges, you will also notice that some of those contracts, even though they were coordinated provincially, you will also notice that they will differ region to region, because there was also a greater extent of knowing that the teacher certificates were not the same. For instance, there were teachers with 25 years training experience and teaching experience, but who only went as far as the second year and did not graduate, and they were absorbed by the authorities. And then there were those who looked younger, but who happened to have graduated in the scheme of the education training colleges, and they went through the system and even went through the ranks of being subject head or deputy principal and so on. So there will never be a similarity in those conditions, but I will assume that the nature and the extent to which people were engaged, it was also appreciating of their experiences and their athletic skills and subjects that were supposed to be taught. I will end there.
Well, thank you. Just to add, this one is directed to HR. On your priority areas moving forward, 28, I think what is disturbing is the report on the relocation process, relocation of staff 5. And you say you've conducted this relocation process in only 4 provinces. What happens to the other provinces? Because to me, you see, in terms of first things first, this was supposed to be done now in all the provinces, because we're talking a successful migration of Tibet colleges, which then talk to, you know, this one would also contribute towards that successful migration process. Relocation of staff file. So that as you talk to us about the challenges on the staffing establishments of the all the TVET colleges and the CEO community, it's CET, Community Education and Training Colleges. Yeah. You see now, you've given us an impression that you've only dealt with the, from the four provinces. What happens to the other province? So they're supposed, actually this year, you're supposed to go all out flat to get all this information so that as you move forward and planning for the following year, you take all this information into consideration. So I think to Ms. Key, you must then explain what then is happening to the other provinces' staff side. All right. Oh, Ms. Nkadimi, I nearly... Sorry. Ms. Nkadimi?
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions are on the double parking. When Mr. Parker was presenting, he made mention of a lot of educators that are unqualified in KZN. And if we want to get rid of this double parking, I just want to hear from the department. Is the department maybe having a plan of maybe generating educators that will be qualified to replace those educators, because it is a huge in KZN? And with another one, I think the other double parking is also happening in the TVET colleges, where we find educators in the afternoon lecturing in the TVET colleges. And what I've realized is that some of them is because they've got this scarce skill, for an example, mathematics. And if we get rid of those, also is the department maybe having a plan of educators that can go and replace them in those areas? Thank you very much.
For all the issues that you have raised, we will now ask the department to provide us with the responses, accurate responses.
Chairperson, honorable members, thank you for those questions and comments and advice. I'm going to try to cover a number of areas in which I directed in me. Those that I missed out, the delegation of PDG's CFO will cover that particular area. I'll give the 0% increase to CFO and acting DDG recent. Only, I think let me start in regards to KwaZulu-Natal. We just painted what the actual situation was in regards to this quick and dirty. But I think members are absolutely correct. While it may look that it's totally different, 6,000 centers, underqualified, double parking, we have to be sensitive to what the context is that gives rise to that particular way. I think we can't blame everything on provinces, because the Constitution allowed provinces concurrent functionality in crafting their self-delivery model according to their own provincial and contextual needs. So that is why I was saying that from a policy point of view, we're saying that we've given ourselves some time, and Dr. Becky, Dr. Flumber will tell us, in terms of how to revamp the whole community education and training sector, and what its particular implications are. So, in the presentation, I did not try to allude to saying that double parking is wrong, or getting rid of unqualified educators is wrong. I'm just sticking what is there. And the issue is we have to be very sensitive of how we deal with the balance of the availability of qualified educators vis-a-vis the issue of shortage reserve, what the context is. But I think what is important is we must have a plan, whether it's a two-year plan, a five-year plan, on how we're going to particularly deal with that. Part of that will also allow us to go into negotiations for collective agreements. So I'm sort of covering, because I think the major comments coming from members and questions was around that particular particular issue. Now, we haven't done such an exercise in all the provinces, Honorable Kesson. However, I think it would be important as we begin to frame and implement the new policy that we will take that into account. We just saw Kesson and this being much more urgent in terms of dealing with it. But what I can indicate is that we know that the Gauteng and the Western Cape had also different particular issues. And I think the Western Cape one was reported in previous portfolio committees. So, for example, in the Western Cape, they did not employ the educators in public centers, which, according to our policies and regulations, cannot happen. So, the Western Cape may have saw it fit, and that the governing bodies would have employed those educators, but we took legal advice that if we have public funds for posts, Parliament, etc., the Minister establishes those posts and what money is appropriated. But what we've done in the Western Cape, then of course we accepted that may have been the way that they governed there, but we absorbed those people who are paid by governing bodies into our establishment. So, in other words, they didn't have guarantee of employment, they now have that guarantee of state employment. Colleagues will add if they found anything else here in other provinces. When the learner education ratio 1 is to 8 is inefficient, I think, Honorable Kesson, it's within the context of how do we deal with adult education, number 1, and are they concentrated as young people, for example, in schooling, or are they dispersed geographically, the issue of distance, the issue of time, even though if they're having adult education in the evening, are people able to navigate the distances and distances? So that policy issue and engagement that we will have to have as we roll out to the policy. There is no good or bad learner educator ratio. Often it is dictated by circumstances of availability or budget. And perhaps sometimes, especially those that are very better in terms of education, 1:8 may be ideal. On the other hand, 1:40 may be ideal, depending on the circumstances. So I think more work needs to be done in that particular area. CFO will deal with the baseline of 30 billion. The DG, which would have to be with anticipated enrollment in DVET colleges. Honorable Swera, DG, which will deal with the difficult one, the infrastructure and when it will be adjudicated, etc. Honorable Swera, again, you raised the issue of double parking. And I think my overall response is we have to be very cautious, because you're correct. We may have real double parking, maybe more effective and efficient, especially in an area in which we don't envisage adult basic education to last forever. Because it is not a permanent program or project that we should aspire to as a society. We must be able to eradicate illiteracy and lack of schooling at some point. So the issue is that we will have to balance the issue of having new permanent employees versus double parking. Sometimes it may just be the most efficient and effective short-term solution to be able to deal with it, provided it doesn't interfere with that person's full-time job. And that is always the issue. You must be doing your full-time job properly, and then you can provide your competence. In regards to the under and unqualified, again, I think this what it's pointing to is that there's a holistic
process required around the capacity and the educators and the nature of the appointments and the under and unqualified and how we deal with the issue. I think the point is if we just get rid of all unqualified educators for now without assessing what impact they're having. So the issue is we have recognition of prior learning, we've got experience that we need to take into account, but we have to put time frames by which we ourselves say that we will not employ unqualified educators anymore. But we should also provide the resources to be able to get people to be qualified. Honorable Mbatha, I'm not sure first question or the comment on how do we deal with demand, something that I got, but anyway. But I think I've covered your point with the other issues about we must look at the context in what is the good the KZN province wanted to achieve, and maybe what we see there from outside is different, may have been the best solution. So in our investigation, we will have to begin to look at. I'm not sure what is meant by establishment that other departments had funded AET in KZN. In terms of the function shift, all AES funds were located in the provincial Department of Education under a program, under 5 or 6, and Treasury had moved that fund. If there are other funds that were particularly utilized, it was an AON and it still belongs to the province and to that particular department. So we're not going to be able to have a stake on that particular one. But we're working through our skills development, our human resource development councils with previous officers, where they're also beginning to share and contribute some additional funds that they have in terms of increasing our skills development. This is the most fundamental question that we have to take for the next 2 or 3 years, is the balance between enrollment, facilities, and lessons. And then, of course, the funds. And before you increase enrollment, make sure that you have the facilities and make sure that you have the lecturers. And I think that's the advice that is quite useful. Yeah, I mean, I agree that the condition of service and contracts can differ from region to region. Chairperson, the DDG Bobo will deal with the relocation of files from the other provinces, and Honorable Garibin, again the dump parking, I think I've covered those particular areas. Do you have a plan to provide additional, Dr. McLaughlin will need to indicate, we are now going to be lobbying for funds for TVS and community education training colleges, like the Fulani Shaka that we had, for teachers that was quite successful. We have to begin a program on that. And again, Honorable Gentlemen, you're absolutely correct. We are not saying that double parking must be eradicated, etc. We have to balance that in terms of the available skills available, and if we've got experts, we must use them to the maximum. And it means that, for example, in TVET colleges, because there's scarce skills in engineering, etc., we must make maximum use of those, providing that a full-time employment does not suffer. Honorable Chair, to you, if I can move to Dr. Tlobo, Mr. Mbowo, and then the three folk.
With the question of the shortfall in the TVET space, and with regard to subsidies and transfers, and a shortfall with regard to NSOs. With regard to the current funding of colleges, we are anticipating that in 2015, this year, the system is underfunded by $3 billion. Next year, that amount is likely to rise to $4.7 billion. That's the level of unfunding of TVET colleges before you deal with the issue of what additional funding must be there in order to mitigate the impact of a light call of there must be no fees in that space. Over the past many years, as CFO indicated, we have raised the issue with Treasury, but we have really been unsuccessful. We have been unsuccessful in dealing with this issue to increase funding for the college sector. While there is an understanding that the TVET sector is important for skills development, but it is not matched by the funding into that space. In the same vein, with regard to NSFAS, the shortfall for this year to enable us to fund students appropriately with regard to NSFAS exemptions is 1.6 billion. And next year is likely to be 2.3 billion. Now, that means if the budget remains where it is adjusted only for CPIX, the number of beneficiaries out of the NSFAS is going to go this way, going to decrease, because the cost of delivering the program is going to increase, and as a result we can only afford fewer students, both in terms of subsidies and in terms of being exempted to pay fees by NSFAS. Let me put the issue of very safe, or we have another way of dealing with it as a financial expert. Let me put forward the issue of when we get a budget allocation from Treasury, it is always adjusted upward by CPIX. And then, accordingly, the program cost, the total program cost is adjusted in the same manner. What then happens when we give allocations to colleges? Colleges are under strict rules, please, even though the policy does allow you, please don't increase fees further than the CPIX adjustment provided by National Treasury. Now, what of importance then is that a person in the street, if they were paying 7,000 rand in fees this year, and that 7,000 rand has been adjusted by CPIX to 7,500, then there may be a perception that actually you have increased the fees, and that is the space that requires management. The other issue raised was the issue of I think in the bid adjudication committee of which I think is coming on Thursday or sometime next week, and the issue of the publication of the tender is going to be said. But also in the same vein, I must point out that it was not without the department adhering to time with regard to this. Bids were advertised, they were evaluated, but at the point of doing due diligence, that's where things fall apart, to find submissions where there's absolutely no capacity to a bid submitted, but the service provider has absolutely no capacity to deliver, either deliver at all and or to deliver on time. And that has, we had to go back and say, let us re-advertise, because the risk in this case is that to give work to a service provider, and you know exactly that the service provider has no capacity to deliver it. Yes, the opportunity is there to deliver the work from the people of South Africa, but those who submitted and were put through an evaluation process, through a due diligence process, they just didn't have the capacity to deliver on what we were expecting them to do. The issue of the Masifundi Sun Literacy Campaign in KZN, I really have reason to believe that it was an earmarked allocation by the province. I don't think it was part of Program 6 for adult education. We have had in the basic education a good project, which over time I think also has been an earmarked allocation or donor funding. Whether or not that project is still continuing is a different debate. But if it was an earmarked allocation and not part of the funding that moved for us, then Firoz has indicated that it was provincial money. It's not the money that you can go and claim it. It must continue to support the function of adult education and or community colleges. Honorable Benjamin Katume, with regard to, I just want to add what Mr. Patel said. There are certain variables with regard to the provisions in the afternoon in TVET courses. Those are one, the colleges are besting in sims in terms of infrastructure, and therefore they have to offer some of the programs in the afternoon. When this issue arose, the department took a position that it can't be the same teacher who teaches in the morning who must also teach in the afternoon. This gets to have the qualified people to teach in the afternoon, because for the teacher who continues to teach from morning until afternoon and then start again until evening, the palette of provision is completely compromised. And therefore, in a country which also is trying to deal with issues of unemployment, if there are unemployed people who have got the skill to teach, please appoint them on a full-time basis to render the service. However, there are other people in the TVET space who are not, how should I put this, who bring in a particular socialized skill. They may not be working in the TVET space, they may not be working in school, they may be coming from industry, but because the college needs that kind of a skill, and we have allowed colleges to do that within the context of the within the context of their available project. And also against the understanding that some of those people are offering occupational programs, the skill of which might lie more in industry than within the college. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I will respond to the question about the five remaining provinces. There is a plan that is, a worked out very, very thorough plan in regard to the creation of the registry in the department. The reason why some of the provinces have not yet transferred files relates to issues of the ages audit, because the provinces were also audited. And there was an arrangement that, with some provinces, whilst their audit was going on, they requested that we delay the transfer of files, but we do have a plan, we have a program. There is also an audit steering committee in the department, and the establishment of the registry is also one of the items that are monitored by that audit steering committee.
But I also want to raise that we do have a challenge in regard to space, both for the finance and the HR registry. But because we have an additional building that is a child center, so the registry will actually be located in that building, in the new building. The third thing has been delivered for the registry. We appointed 20 registry clerks already, to manage the registry. So we are ready. Our target is that by end of January, the registry will be fully established. Thanks.
Thank you, Jefferson. Perhaps just for a few additional comments, I think Dr. Mathobe explained everything quite thoroughly. I think just the important factor to note is that these shortfalls that Dr. Mathobe mentioned specifically is actually to assist the current baseline. Then we're not talking expansion, we're not talking anything additional into the sector. Those are shortfalls that we have currently in the baseline. And the counter-argument by Treasury the whole time is that we need to improve the efficiencies in the system. But without additional resources, to improve efficiencies are also extremely difficult. We need to inject additional resources to be able to improve efficiencies. And that is for subsidies on the one side, but also for NSFAS student support on the other side. That immediately leads us to another problem within the university as well as in the TVET sector, and that is student debt that is highly increasing at the moment because of the fact that all the NSFAS students cannot be fully funded and assisted, and those institutions that carry that burden. And that is another problem that we're going to need to face very, very shortly. In terms of expansion, certainly there are certain limitations as well. We talk about infrastructure abilities, we talk about the availability of lecturers, etc. But certainly we also need expansion in the system to address all the youth that's coming out of the school system, as well as those which are referred to as the need youth. So certainly additional resources in total would be required. We can perhaps assist the committee, also provide the committee with the full set of data that we provided to National Treasury with all the various numbers and motivations to support the committee as well, and we can send that through to the Secretariat. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Chair. Just there was one question that has been missed here. And this is as you can do it. The issue was the link between the principal, the school, and the facility by Honourable Kitton. The issue is that the nature of our service is such that it is more efficient and effective for adult education, particularly adult education within a continuing education, community education and training, is to use existing facilities. Honourable Kassim, you are correct that when it was in the provincial function, the same accounting officer was responsible for the school facility as well as adult education and training. Now, currently, the situation as it stands is we are a national sphere department, and where the school facility is under a provincial authority. So it's not automatic that because you're managing schools, you can use that facility. We have an agreement with all the MECs that we will continue using the schools until our plan is completed. In terms of the South African Schools Act, after the agreement with the MECs, that's schools can refuse us to use their facility. But I can't do that to the head of the department because whatever the school acts, the head of the department can utilize it. So we will have to have some agreements continuing after this for the continuing use of the schools. And I think it's just responsible accountability, that one can't allow the facilities to be unfettered. There must be an agreement, so we make sure that our employees do not damage somebody else's facility, that they look after the facility, and if there are costs and expenses, that they entitled to some recovery of fair costs. For example, maintaining the lights, maintaining the ablution facilities, and also paying for the use of electricity. Thank you, sir.
I have follow-up questions. I just would like, okay, fine. Honorable Member Cassie, but then my comment on the advice given by Mr. Patel was balancing between environment, infrastructure, literacy, and the budget. You said advice would be to slow down on enrollments where there is no infrastructure and there is no budget. It is a kind advice. Let us be honest. It's not practical because you have a white paper that says you've got to increase access to education by even those who come from the previously disadvantaged. But in addition to that, we know that there is a very high demand from those who come from the previously disadvantaged. But also we, or let me put it this way, the clarion call has been those students who cannot access university education must go to TVET college. That's what we're telling people. This. So therefore you can't even say you can't increase access. But it is true that also the demand at that level will not meet the supply. So what are we doing then to find a way of managing that? Remember the protest at the beginning of the year are because of this very reason. Now this is going to now escalate to TVET colleges as well. So what are we doing? I think all of us with a full understanding that we are operating within the radical socio-economic phase. We are expected to come up with radical and innovative interventions. I think that's what is expected of all of us. Innovative, but also radical. We're going to radicalize our interventions. I'm not getting that feeling for now. So if you can just tell us that, if, you know, we just change our way of thinking and become radical, I think that will assist. Honourable Member, is there another person who would like to come in? None? All right. Honourable Member Kasim, it's a follow-up question.
Chair, there was one question that was not answered. I had asked for what is the current increases that are taking place at TVET colleges. I know that it was said that, you know, we ask the TVET colleges or beg them or whatever it is to, you know, keep it at, you know, CPIX. But what is the reality of the increases that have been taking place, if you have some sort of idea of that? But, Chair, I've got a number of questions, which I know we are pressed for time. What I would ask Mr. Trudeau had referred to a full set of data that he can make available to the committee. Perhaps that will answer most of our questions. And to expedite our time, if we can just ask that is made available to the Secretary for the members, so that we can have a more informed discussion and oversight as we continue. Chair, just with regards to my follow-up questions, I've got two specific questions. The first is as pertains to the function shift at the TVET colleges and the monitoring of compliance with these colleges and the type of recourse that a student at these colleges may have. And I frame this, Chair, within the context of particularly students who are NSFAS beneficiaries, that at many of these colleges, at either specific courses or it's specific instances, or sometimes it's across board, having been forced to pay some form of upfront fee that they should not be paying. I know where I picked up this issue. I've written to minister, and the response that we've received is that this is not taking place, but we know that it is taking place. We know that in certain instances, over 1,000 rand sometimes, or in some cases, even in well-run colleges, there are specific causes where these poor students who are not just beneficiaries are being made to pay these upfront fees and are being told they're not going to get any of that back. A lot of the time it's tuition upfront fees, registration upfront fees, sometimes it's residence upfront fees, and they are very, very inconsistent at these institutions, with some students being told to pay 4,000 rand, some being told to pay 2,000 rand, etc. What type of recourse is available in that regard? I assume that these principals are employed by the department, and they've been given delegated authority to employ others within these colleges as well. And what type of monitoring capacity is there within the department as it pertains to these 50 TVET colleges and over 250 campuses that exist throughout the country? That's the first question. So the second question is, as it pertains to the targets of the white paper, the targets of the NDP, and the targets of the department itself, of access within the TVET college sector. The specific target that says by 2020 we should be at a specific place in time, etc. To what extent are we on track to meet those targets? I know that the targets, for example, for this year have been revised down, and so forth. So within the current funding environment, are there revised targets for next year and for the following years up to 2020, or are there any specific interventions that will take place for the targets? And lastly, Chairperson, this is specifically directed to the CEO. It was mentioned in the presentation that the ability to reprioritize funds within the department was at 0% or close to 0%. And I asked a similar question in the last meeting we had had, and I didn't get an adequate response. But my question was, and it links with the 0% fee increases, and it links with the growth underfunding that is taking place across the department in the various sectors and functions that exist within the department. With this in mind, and with the inability to reprioritize funds because of the funding being closely scarce across the different sectors, why is it that the department has not made any application within for additional funds within the adjustment budget currently before appropriation? The conditions that they currently stand, Chair, is that there is huge amounts of sympathy and support across political lines within this legislative body, and there is a mandate that exists to be able to make adjustments to reprioritize funds within the current fiscal. And within the quarter, the last quarter of this financial year, for that to take place, yet the department has not requested any adjustment to take place, and as it is well not requesting any adjustment, then the conditions are perfect for that adjustment to take place and for reprioritization of additional funds to come within the fiscal. Why is it that the department refuses to make an application?
Okay. The department and... request the department to respond. I take it that these are the last questions in this briefing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to clarify when I spoke of this triangle of enrollment with facilities and lecturers, and what I meant to say is we will take all three together. You can't rapidly expand enrollment and use all the money for enrollment and you don't budget for facilities nor for lecturers and lecturer training. So basically that's what I was indicating. In regards to being radical, in regards to the issue of our expansion, I agree that we've got our running orders in terms of the NDP, but it all comes back to again in terms of what the CFO was talking and what Honorable Ketum was now indicating is the issue of the ability to move resources from elsewhere into the education and training sector. The space for reprioritization is about where we should cut university enrollment and increase TVET. That is what the CFO was referring to. But I'll leave most of these questions to the CFO and then to Dr. Matobo in regards to some of the questions raised over today through you, Chair.
Chair and Honourable Members, the specific question which Honourable Member Kasung asked is the question relating to fee increases. Yesterday we had a meeting with called Algorithm Principles in order to try and identify risk and mitigation strategies to deal with the risk in preparation for the beginning of 2016. The agreement reached is colleges should not increase fees outside of the already adjusted increase by the CPIX. In other words, even though the policy allows the colleges to vary within 10%, there should be no variation, no increases of whatever percentage. And if the program cost the 20% which the student must pay, if it is 12,000, you can't get at any percentage as an individual college. In other words, there is no institution which must add fees beyond the adjusted CPIX. Now, the issue of compliance, I think we really welcome the issue of being alerted of perversities in the system. If there are colleges who are charging returning students who have in the previous year qualified for LSFAS, that is real perversity because that is not allowed. At the beginning of this year, we asked NSFAS to transfer funding to colleges which they later have to link to students in order to assist students who are returning, and they are returning, they qualify for NSFAS funding the previous year. But if that is not happening, like the case we're talking about, if it is not happening, please bring it to our attention so that we can be able to intervene on behalf of the students, because they shouldn't be charging them any kind of a fee as the returning student who had qualified for any sort of previous fee. Let me also say this. Part of the funding we have been trying to apply to Treasury Reform is to strengthen the capacity of the department to monitor the system. But given the fact that there is no additional funding, and the idea is to use the staff who are in our regional offices, who are pretty close to these institutions, to monitor them on a frequent basis. We just completed the monitoring and evaluation framework for colleges, and which includes the issues relating to compliance. And that is the staff we are going to use. But even then, given the size of the system and distances, it is a very costly exercise to do it as ideally as we want to do it. With regard to revised targets for next year, the targets which we have put on the MTEF as we announced when we were presenting our ATP at the beginning of the year, those targets have not been revised for next year. In other words, the only revision will be an addition of the outer year, because the years between 2016 is the best year, and then the second and third, those are already in our ATP, and then we just have to add the outer year, and in order to try and achieve the growth. But we can only now, in the context of a budget which is not moving commensurately with the demand for education and training. And we have to enter into a kind of understanding of planning together with the sector education and training authorities. To see the attitude that, particularly in the Tibet College space, the attitude that you are going to have a deficit and run through the sector is not working. Rather, the best approach is to work with the SSPs of the sectors and see what kind of training they would want to run, and then we run with those in order to increase enrollment. So that then that is planned, it is not an afterthought because we are not able to meet the target. Integrate the system because the sectors do not have institutions at the levels of intermediate skills at the Tibet colleges are the best ways to train for that kind of a... The integration, the attempt has always been look at the LSPS3 and use the public space to offer those programs and to offer those skills. And that's the only way we can actually approximate to meet the target. Those were the questions which had been raised by the chair.
Just the upfront fees and the recourse. The upfront fees, that's still happening. And what recourse do you... We'll give the helpline.
Yep. If you are not, I can put it the other way around. Honorable Kassim talked about students who qualified for NSFAS, and at the beginning of the year, they are charged upfront fees. And I'm saying, actually, NSFAS pays upfront for that in order to ensure that colleges do not charge fees to students who qualify for NSFAS. Students who are likely to be victims of being charged upfront fees are basically new students because there has been no determination of whether or not they would or would not qualify for NSFAS. But the returning students qualifying for NSFAS, no. We will be happy to receive information. If you are not successful when you raise it with the college or the council, please escalate it to us to deal with the individual college, because I'm sure it is not a system-wide practice. But there may be colleges who are into that kind of practice.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the adjusted business process, just perhaps to indicate to the committee that there are specific and highly strict criteria that exist within the PFMA and Treasury regulations for a department to be able to request for additional funding in the adjusted estimates. And in addition to that, National Treasury also prescribed certain limitations in terms of requests for additional funding. So some of those, for example, would be, number one is that the adjusted estimates would be there to apply for rollovers where you had very large underspending in a previous financial year and you want to roll over some of those funds. In the department's case, we could not do that because our total underspending was 3.1 million, and of that, the largest portion due to one specific activity was less than 1 million. And Treasury only allows you to roll over 1 million plus on one specific activity. So we were disqualified in that regard. In relation to requests for additional funding, there are also specific limitations, and the requirements there are that it must be for totally unforeseen and unavoidable circumstances for which certain definitions also exist. By the time that the adjusted estimates were finalized and the interest by departments were required, the 0% increase was not on the table yet, and the department did not then thereafter submit any requests for that specifically. There is also a third process, and a process which the department did follow in previous financial years, and that is that in order to submit a request for unforeseen, unavoidable circumstances, that request must go to the Treasury Committee, as it is mentioned, and the Treasury Committee is actually a committee of Cabinet, which considers those requests based on recommendations made by National Treasury. We did, in past years, submit a request to that committee, that is done through a Cabinet memorandum, and specifically for our critical shortfalls with examination services. But to date, we were not successful to receive any additional funding for that. So in terms of the current financial year, just again to emphasize that the issues in terms of the 0% fee increase and related shortages that occurs that we are aware of now only became matters that we need to address after the adjusted estimates inputs, and therefore the department was not in a position to request any additional funding for that specific purpose. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we then, as we close this discussion, I really would like to also comment on the delayed infrastructure development in the TVET sector. From the reports that we got, it does look like we have a problem with your SCM supply chain management committees, because they are the ones who appoint service providers. Remember, there's a specification committee, there's an evaluation committee, and then appointment. Now, we have a problem there. I'm not sure what the department is going to do with it, but there's a challenge there. Yes, Mr. Patel, I can see your question with your eyes. There's a challenge there. How did you appoint incapacitated service providers? Now, because of that poor decision-making, now the whole sector is now, or this poor decision has impacted negatively on this one. Now, because we don't have infrastructure that has been completed to accommodate the new increased access, you see now, we're not going to make progress in this area of work. But also that has caused a situation where this project has got to overlap to the following project. An impact on the following year, an impact negatively on the following year's plans, project plans. Can you see? So I think there's a problem there, and I would recommend that you review your committees, and actually in terms of what we were advised by your AG, and apply a, what is this, management, what is it? Consequence management. It's going to be radical because we are impacting negatively on service delivery. And the government, with the budget that has been allocated, we have to provide the service delivery within the time frame given. So from there, I think we're not happy. If you can look at that. Just to summarize, we really would like to thank the department for coming to give us a briefing on the progress made in the shift of the TVET colleges and the CET colleges to the department. And from the presentation that was made and also from the engagement, there is progress made. I must also thank the members who, in the interrogation of the presentation, raised very important issues. I think that must have sensitized you, conscientized you of the areas of focus. Because in our next meeting, we will be focusing just on the progress made in those areas that we think need improvement. Of course, we have also made observations that you have the following challenges: strengthening of the 90 district offices. And here you're only talking about your CET. I also strengthen the nine, I think there are offices for TVET colleges, nine. Am I right? The strengthening of those so that we can, in the next year, can then experience another progress in the area of service delivery in this sector. And then we've also observed budgetary constraints for TVET colleges, increased access, quality education, infrastructure development, and here I know that there's been a concern raised on the lack of infrastructure grant to assist in this area of work, delayed infrastructure implementation. Again, the other challenge raised on CET was challenge on double parking of staff. I heard Mr. Patel trying to defend himself, hearing that there's nothing wrong. Taking into consideration the high level of unemployment, from this angle, I would say it would have been better if we also create jobs for other people. Help this government create jobs for those people who are unemployed. All right? Again, double parking in terms of management and unqualified staff. I'm still not sure what's going to happen to unqualified staff, because from Mr. Patel's response, they're also protected by the Labor Relations Act. Am I right? Unqualified staff, yes, because they've been in the system for a long time now. All right, also the staffing, the staff that substitutes those on leave. Here the assumption is that you have the staff that is waiting for that role, substitution role, and you're paying them. And how big is that challenge? How big? Because if you can have a lot of people just waiting and earning a salary for not doing anything, waiting to be appointed when others are on leave. Because remember, we're looking for money where we can find it and reprioritize to meet these other challenges. And then, outstanding salary progression. This is another challenge, and outstanding pension updates. But also key is the actual quantification of the 0% fee increase at TVET sector level. The quantification. Something else to say. I heard you say that you've agreed that there's not an increase above 10% to address. For now, the language is, and this came from the president, so we can't defy the president. Now, the language is zero fee free, so you must find that money. Before they even introduce this increase and start trouble, before the trouble start troubling us. We don't want, so prevention here would be, you know, better than cure. So, it's not so bad to, until presidential cutting pronounce itself on the way forward. For now, they must not increase. Please, must help us. Yes, because this increase is very costly. It can even cause us malicious damage to property. So if you can avoid that and wait until at the right time, then we can pronounce. For now, they must not increase. Well, thank you so much. I think this was my understanding of the key challenges, and then we are hoping that as the Constitution requires that we must be responsive to the needs of the people, I'm sure we will also respond appropriately to these challenges that have come through our engagement. Thank you very much. We're done with the briefing on by the department. Now, in terms of the agenda, yeah, maybe it's only fair that I give you a human rights break. 5 minutes, and there's tea set here. I think this was very robust, so you need it. You deserve it. All right? Thank you very much. Human rights break for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.